please stand as we close with I Surrender All. We're into the third chapter of Ruth this morning. Isn't it on? Can't you hear me? Oh, okay, now it is. Okay. We're into the third chapter of Ruth this morning, and this is really where things start coming together, and we begin seeing the plot of the book of Ruth. We begin to see how God is working in Ruth and Naomi's life, and how we can learn from them this morning. Let's start with a word of prayer. Father, come to us by your Spirit. Speak to us. Help us to understand. Father, there are some things in this book that are very strange to us, that are so unlike our culture. Things were done very differently back then. But you were moved and worked and touched lives powerfully, and we'll see how that works. So, Father, give us your heart this morning. Help us to see as you see. I pray in Jesus' name. Amen. As you remember, Ruth is Naomi's daughter-in-law. And Naomi and Ruth's husbands both passed away. This is when both Naomi had gone to Moab, and Ruth, of course, was from Moab, and there both of them lost their husbands. And so Naomi decided to make the journey back to Bethlehem to start a new life. Ruth vowed her loyalty to Naomi, and these very, very touching and famous words were said by Naomi, by Ruth to Naomi. Where you go, I will go. Your people will be my people. And your God will be my God. Nothing but death shall separate us. Powerful, powerful words. The truth is, at this point, Naomi was anything but optimistic about her future. When she arrived in Bethlehem, everyone said, "Oh, look, Naomi, she's come back." But Naomi would stop them when she heard that, and she said, "Don't call me Naomi, because the name Naomi means pleasant." She said, "Call me Mara, because Mara means bitter." Naomi said, "The Lord has made my life bitter. I went away full, but I came home empty. The Lord has afflicted me." Now, in spite of Naomi's less than optimistic outlook, her life was about to change. Her harvest was about to come in. She was positioning herself for God's harvest. How could she do this? Well, in a couple of ways. First, even though she said some very negative things, she continued to make some very positive steps. Now, yes, she was feeling very sorry for herself. She got out of Moab and on the road back to Bethlehem because she knew that Bethlehem was the place where she could experience God's blessing. And this, let this be a reminder to all of us. Even when you don't feel positive about everything that's going on in your life, don't let that prevent you from making positive steps that'll put you on the road you need to be to take you where you need to go. To position yourself for the blessing and the provision of God. Another reason for the change in Naomi's life was her daughter-in-law, Ruth. Naomi hadn't wanted to be a burden on Ruth, so she tried to get Ruth to go back to her own mother and father. But Ruth insisted on traveling with Naomi. She was faithful to her mother-in-law. Why? I think there were a couple of reasons. First, I think Ruth wanted to live with God's people. She no longer wanted to live in the pagan land of Moab, where they worshipped false gods. She wanted to live in Bethlehem, where she could worship the true God in the presence of God's people. And secondly, Ruth simply felt tremendous love and loyalty toward Naomi. Maybe she felt like she owed her something. Maybe she worried about who would look after her. Or maybe she just enjoyed her company. But whatever the reason may have been, the result was that Ruth said to Naomi, "I want to stay with you from now on." Now, Naomi didn't guilt Ruth into staying with her. In fact, just the opposite. Ruth put out a very clear opportunity. Naomi put out a very clear opportunity for Ruth to leave. Ruth stayed because she wanted to, because she was called to. It was Ruth's presence in Naomi's life that made all the difference. Now, every one of us has the chance to be a Ruth in someone's life. There is someone for whom you can bring love and loyalty and encouragement and hope and help and support. And you may be all they've got. So give some thought to how God can use you this way in the lives of others. Look at the people around you that God has brought into your life. Chapter 1 finds Naomi saying, "The Lord has made my life bitter. I went away full, I came back empty." In chapter 2, we begin to see some change. After Ruth took the initiative to go to work in the fields, gleaning the grain, and after she came home with a sack full of barley, and after she told Naomi how Boaz had helped her, Naomi said, "The Lord bless him." And she talked about what a wonderful guy Boaz really was. Do you see what's happening? Little by little, we see Naomi beginning to abandon her pessimism. Little by little, we see Naomi becoming more optimistic to the future. And so today we arrive in chapter 3, and the tables have turned. Now Naomi begins looking after Ruth. She devises a plan that will ensure a good future for Ruth, her daughter-in-law. So chapter 3 references some ancient cultural traditions that aren't easy for the modern reader to understand. So today, let's work our way through this story, stopping here and there to clarify some curiosities. And then let's talk for a few minutes about some powerful lessons that we can learn. The first couple of verses say this. In verses 1 and 2, "One day Naomi said to Ruth, 'My daughter, it's time that I found a permanent home for you so that you'll be provided for. Boaz is a close relative of ours, and he's been very kind by letting you gather grain with his young women.'" In the previous chapter, Boaz was referred to not just as a close relative, but he was called a kinsman redeemer. Now, a kinsman redeemer was a man who volunteered to take responsibility for his extended family. So he took very special care to look after his family. In ancient Israel, it was custom that if a man died, leaving behind a widow, it became the responsibility of the next of kin, presumably his brother, to marry the widow, to care for her financially, even to provide her with a child so that the deceased man's name and family line could continue. Now, this may seem strange to us today because, well, let's remember this was 3,000 years ago, and it was in a land a long, long ways away. There was no social security or life insurance. Times were very different. This tradition was established so that the most vulnerable members of society, women and children, could be provided for in the event of an untimely death. This custom also made it possible for a man to have some peace of mind, knowing that if he died, his wife would be financially secure enough to be taken care of. It was the next of kin's responsibility to provide for a man's widow and children But sometimes there was no next of kin. And sometimes the next of kin was not financially secure enough to take on the added responsibility. And so that's why every family group had what was called a kinsman redeemer. Men who were affluent enough and good-hearted enough to look after family members who couldn't always look after themselves. A kinsman redeemer could pay off a family's debt, or buy their freedom from slavery, or purchase property that a family member needed to sell, or even marry a deceased man's widow. So when people were in trouble, they would often look to their family's kinsman redeemer for help. And as we'll see in the next chapter, there were times when a kinsman redeemer would even say no. However, the idea was that in taking on this role in the family, his inclination was to say yes whenever it was possible. So Naomi owned property that had belonged to her late husband. It was a house, maybe some land. Maybe she owned it outright. Maybe she had something similar to a mortgage on it. We don't really know. The text doesn't tell us. Obviously, if she owned land outright, that could produce crops. She wouldn't have needed a kinsman redeemer. So I'm pretty sure that there was some kind of a lien on the land. According to the ancient custom, Naomi could go to a kinsman redeemer and say, "Will you buy back my land and take me as your wife and take care of me for the rest of my life? If we have no children together, when I die, the land will become yours to be inherited by your sons." Now, she could have done that. That was her right. But she had seen how Boaz treated Ruth. And remember how Boaz was kind of stricken by Ruth last week? He kind of fell all over himself to make sure Ruth was taken care of in the fields. And I think Naomi's reasoning was something like this. There's no better man than Boaz. He seems to have an interest in Ruth. And I can make sure that Ruth is taken care of and that she has the happiness that she deserves. And if she's taken care of, well, then I know I'll be taken care of as well. This is the same woman who said a couple of chapters ago, "Call me bitter, because the Lord has afflicted me and given me much suffering." Now, instead of trying to redeem her property and gain a husband for herself, which was her right and her privilege under law, instead she seeks to gain a husband for her daughter-in-law. Remember last week I quoted Warren Wiersbe from his book, Be Committed? He says, "If our circumstances change for the better, but we remain the same, then we will become worse. God's purpose in providence is not to make us comfortable, but to make us conformable. Conformable to the image of his son." So Naomi's circumstances changed, and she became a better person. Now, obviously, it would have been better if Naomi had been optimistic the whole time. If she had been, she could have saved herself a whole lot of misery, believe me. But she didn't continue to compound her mistakes. When things in her life started turning to the better, Naomi got better as well. Now, you'll find this is true in your life as well. In the midst of your self-pity, God will often send something your way that you really haven't done anything to earn. And even while you're moaning and groaning and feeling sorry for yourself, he'll bring a blessing into your life. He does this to give you a chance to change your attitude. That is, if you'll take it. That's exactly what Naomi did. Chapter 1 of Ruth was a rough patch in Naomi's life. It was a phase. And it wasn't a permanent condition. So let's continue the story. Here's Naomi's plan. She's talking to Ruth about Boaz. And in verse 2, she says, "Tonight he will be winnowing barley at the threshing floor. Now, do as I tell you. Take a bath and put on perfume and dress in your nicest clothes. Then go to the threshing floor, but don't let Boaz see you until he has finished eating and drinking. Be sure to notice where he lies down. Then go and uncover his feet and lie down there. And he'll tell you what to do." "I'll do everything you say," Ruth said. So she went down to the threshing floor that night and followed the instructions of her mother-in-law. After Boaz had finished eating and drinking and was in good spirits, he lay down at the far end of the pile of grain and went to sleep. Then Ruth came quietly, uncovered his feet, and lay down. Now, this really isn't as racy as it sounds, okay? Naomi didn't send Ruth to Boaz's house where he would be sleeping in his bed in his pajamas. She sent him to the threshing floor where he would be sent Ruth to the threshing floor where he would be sleeping on a mat on the floor, and he was fully clothed. Now the plan was, even in that day, socially kind of risky and even unacceptable. But it was not completely scandalous, okay? The harvest was over, and the field owners were grinding their barley. They worked all day long, then slept near their stock during the night to protect it from thieves. This process took a few days, so the field owners really made that whole process into a festive occasion. I mean, they made it into a party. So Naomi told Ruth to take note of where Boaz slept and to lay down at his feet during the night. This was a symbolic gesture. Now, in this culture, where it was not uncommon for entire households to sleep in the same room, servants often slept at the feet of their masters. This was common, and it was not considered scandalous. Verse 8 says, "Around midnight, Boaz suddenly woke up and turned over. He was surprised to find a woman lying at his feet." The King James Version doesn't use the word surprise. It uses the word afraid and says, "Behold, a woman lay at his feet." Behold, indeed, you know. Verse 9, Boaz says, "Who are you?" Now, it's an interesting question. And as we'll see later, it doesn't mean that he didn't recognize her. He was actually using a colloquial Hebrew phrase, asking her to explain herself. "Why are you here? What are you doing? What exactly is going on here?" Verse 9 says, "I am your servant Ruth," she replied. "Spread the corner of your covering over me, for you are my family redeemer." Spread the corner of your covering over me is another phrase with a specific meaning in that culture, and Boaz knew exactly what she wanted. She was saying, "Take me as your wife." Now today, if a man says to his girlfriend, "Will you give me your hand?" and then he places a ring on it, well, she knows exactly what he's asking. It's the same with Boaz. Ruth's words and actions made it clear she was asking him, "Will you take me as your wife?" And in verse 10, it says, "The Lord bless you, my daughter," Boaz exclaimed. "You are showing even more family loyalty now than you did before, for you have not gone after a younger man, whether rich or poor." This shows how much Ruth and Naomi looked out for one another. Naomi could have sought a kinsman redeemer, and husband for herself, but she was more worried about Ruth than she was about her own good. Ruth, on the other hand, would have been within her rights to seek out a young guy, you know, a lot closer to her own age, to start a new life with him from scratch. And she would have had no obligation to see that Naomi was provided for. So when Ruth came to Boaz and said, "Make me your wife," he knew that part of her motive was to see that Naomi was taken care of as well. So verse 11. "Now don't worry about a thing, my daughter. I will do what is necessary, for everyone in town knows you are a virtuous woman." But then he brings up a possible snag in the plan. Okay? Verse 12. "But while it's true that I am one of your family redeemers," and here it is, "there's another man who is more closely related to you than I am. Stay here tonight, and in the morning I will talk to him. If he's willing to redeem you, very well. Let him marry you. But if he's not willing, then as surely as the Lord lives, I will redeem you myself. Now lie down here until morning." Again, we arrive at a custom that really sounds strange to us, doesn't it? And that's because we've grown up with the idea that you marry the person you fall in love with. And I prefer, most of us think that most of us prefer it that way. I know I do. But the fact is that 3,000 years ago, people lived and thought very differently. Marriage was a very different thing. In ancient cultures, marriage was intended to be a more practical, functional agreement. Marriages were often arranged. You didn't marry someone you fell in love with. You hoped you could fall in love with the person you married. Okay? You understand that? It was a very, very different time. Therefore, according to the law, the kinsman redeemer closest in kin to the deceased man had the first right to redeem the property and take responsibility for the family, including taking his widow as his wife. So Boaz said to Ruth, "I'll make sure this works out for you. Either way, you'll have a husband and a home, and Naomi will be taken care of, and your future will be secure. Either with him, this other redeemer, or me." The Bible doesn't say this, but I think Boaz was thinking, "Man, I hope it's me." Boaz really had an eye for Ruth, okay? But he was an honorable man. And he was willing to overlook his own passions to seek after Ruth's good. And so he said, "I'll talk to this other redeemer who really has a primary right to your hand in marriage. And I'll go to him first. And if he says he doesn't want you, then I do." He did, too. In verse 14, "So Ruth lay at Boaz's feet until the morning. But she got up before it was light enough for people to recognize each other. For Boaz had said no one must know that a woman was here at the threshing floor. And then Boaz said to her, 'Bring your cloak and spread it out.' He measured 6 scoops of barley into the cloak and placed it on her back. Then he returned to the town." When Ruth went back to her mother-in-law, Naomi asked, "What happened, my daughter?" Now, the question is translated a little differently here. But Naomi used the exact same phrase that Boaz used when he found Ruth laying at his feet. Literally, "Who are you? just like Boaz wanted to know what was going on, actually Naomi was asking the same thing. What happened? Verse 16, Ruth told Naomi everything Boaz had done for her. And she added, "He gave me these 6 scoops of barley and said, 'Don't go back to your mother-in-law empty-handed.' Then Naomi said to her, 'Just be patient, my daughter, until we hear what happens. The man won't rest until he has settled things today.'" And this is where chapter 3 ends. Next week we'll see how the story resolves, but today I want us to look very quickly at 3 lessons that this chapter teaches us. First one is this: God's blessing flows most freely when you seek to bless others. You put yourself into position to receive God's blessing. Last week we talked about positioning yourself in the pathway of God's provision. So living your life in the midst of God's provision. When you seek to bless others, when you are motivated not so much by looking after your own good, but when you seek to bless the lives of others around you, you open up yourself for God's blessings. Naomi could have found a solution to her problems in such a way that didn't benefit Ruth at all. And she would have been perfectly in keeping with what her culture required. And Ruth could have found a way out of her poverty in such a way that didn't include Naomi. But they both refused to turn their backs on one another. I heard a story a few years back about a group of gals that worked for the Waffle House in Alabama. And you've heard these stories before, but this group, I think there were 10 gals, bought a lottery ticket together with the mutual understanding that if one person won, they would share with the other. So each of them would buy a ticket with the agreement that if any one of them won, they'd all share the proceeds. And then one woman did win a $10 million jackpot. So what did she do? Well, she decided to keep it for herself. They took her to court. And she won in court. She was able to keep the $10 million. But the story doesn't stop there. You know, the most amazing thing about this story is that within a couple of years, this woman was working in another Waffle House, not because she'd lost her fortune, but because she missed the camaraderie of common friendship. She'd gotten lonely. So she went back to work at a Waffle House, hoping to seek to find the same kind of friendship that she had before. It's your choice. You can seek out solutions to your problems in such a way that you get taken care of and everyone else gets left out in the cold, or you can seek solutions to your problems in such a way that those around you are blessed as much as, if not more, than you are. Stop and think for just a moment. Which plan do you think God will bless? Which plan do you think will make your life better in the long run? When you make it your objective to be a blessing to others, God makes it His objective to be a blessing to you. Second lesson: faith often requires taking calculated risks. Faith often involves taking calculated risks. Naomi's plan, sneaking onto the threshing floor and proposing marriage in the middle of the night, came with quite a few risks. Not only could Boaz have simply said no, he could have taken advantage of Ruth in the darkness of the night. Or he could have embarrassed her, shamed her, tarnished her reputation, ruined her chances with any other man. That was the risk that was involved in their plan. And Ruth was well aware of those risks. Faith requires a calculated risk. We call it stepping out in faith, don't we? Sometimes you have to take chances. And Ruth couldn't spend the rest of her life sitting at home on the sofa waiting for Boaz to show up on the doorstep with a box of candy. It just wasn't going to happen. So Ruth was willing to take a risk. At the very least, to risk looking foolish in order to create for herself the life she wanted to live. And the risk paid off. Boaz was moved by her boldness and touched by her sincerity. In order to create the life you want to live, you'll have to do more than wait for the phone to ring. You've got to look ahead to the possibilities, put together a plan, and be willing to take a calculated risk. Be willing to step out in faith, as Ruth did. And God blessed her for it. Here's the third lesson. Glitches arise even in the best laid plans. Glitches arise even in the best laid plans. Things don't often go exactly as you'd like them to go. You get the sense that Ruth didn't mind the idea of being married to Boaz. That's probably why Naomi suggested it. But there was a snag. Another kinsman redeemer had first right of refusal. And he was a younger, probably better-looking guy, okay? Maybe he'll want to purchase Naomi's land. Maybe he'll want to take Ruth as his wife. Maybe. But if you haven't read chapter 4 yet, you're not sure, are you? We'll find out next week. Regardless, there's a snag to deal with. Just because Naomi had a brilliant idea and because Ruth follows through with precision doesn't mean that all the pieces fall immediately into place. Even when God is moving in your life, working in your life, performing miracles in your life, you still have to deal with glitches from time to time. Dealing with glitches means that you have to wait. I don't know about you, but waiting isn't my favorite thing. I'd rather do just about anything than deal with delays. You know what I mean? But guess what? If you want to experience God's miraculous intervention in your life, you'll have to wait from time to time. You'll have to deal with snags and complications and setbacks. The glitches come. It doesn't mean that God isn't involved in what you're doing. It's just a necessary part of the process. When Ruth told Naomi about the situation, Naomi replied in verse 18, "Just be patient, my daughter, until we hear what happens. The man won't rest until he has settled things today." Same thing can be said about the God we serve. The situation you're in, the problem you're facing, the situation, the solution that you seek, he's taking care of it. As David said in Psalm 121, reading from the NIV, "He who watches over you will not slumber. Indeed, he who watches over Israel will neither slumber or sleep." Did you know that God is paying attention to what's happening in your life? He's more aware of what's happening in your life than you are. Even when there's a delay, a holdup, or a glitch, he's still paying attention. He'll provide the right answer for you at the right time. Okay? Ruth's story is a story of redemption. Already we've seen a big transformation in their lives, especially in Naomi's attitude. And there's even more to come. Today was a big step for Ruth because she was able to accept the terms of surrender for God's miraculous blessing in her life. What are God's terms of surrender? It's not that you give up and quit. It's not that you let go and let God do everything for you. Listen to this. It's that you do all you can. You step forward in faith. And you leave the results in His hands. If you're willing to look out for others, and you're willing to take the necessary risk, and you're willing to deal with the inevitable delays, God is ready to bless you and do marvelous things in your life. That's what I hear Ruth chapter 3 telling us. Take the risk. Continue to move forward in the direction of God's blessing. Step out in faith. And God will work. And He'll bless you. And your life will change. Are you ready to receive God's blessing? Let's pray. Father, Ruth chapter 3 is a real puzzle to read at times. It's just hard to fully understand. There's so much that is culturally different than what we experience and know. But the story is very clear. We are called to trust You, to step out in faith, even move when it seems hard to move. That You call us not to just ask You to work and then wait to see if You're going to. You ask us to take steps, to move forward, to move in the direction of Your blessing.